stupid things. Look, this is a bunny corn. If you want to kill it, be my guest, but I'm not doing it. I have no plans to get another curse on myself. I was gonna see if I can sell it to a pet shop or something. Joe sighed as the guard looked at him skeptically. A bunny corn? You're messing with... The guard seemed to sag as he inspected the rabbit. I can never let my daughter know about this. I can see her searching for one and getting skewered trying to hug it.
Makes sense, the other guard chipped in. If she takes after you, that's exactly what would happen. Better hope she gets her brain from her mama.
You know what? The first guard started, reaching for his spear. Can I go in? It'll keep attacking me until I can get it in a cage or something. Joe tapped his foot impatiently as the guards began bantering. The rabbit was squirming again, and holding it was getting more difficult. Strength was his weakness, and the rabbit was getting heavy. Well, exception? The first guard asked the other, who nodded. The guard turned back to Joe. Go on through, but try not to make anything like this a common occurrence. Thanks. Joe walked into the city, and the bunny corn began to squeal. Joe's face turned red as the animal continued to wail especially loudly around any women they passed. He had to ask directions from disapproving passers-by, having never been to a pet store, but he eventually found the small building attached to a warehouse. The pet shop owner offered to buy the bunny corn, but Joe waved away all the offers and tried to simply leave the creature there. The ecstatic shopkeeper was insistent that he take something, so Joe pointed at a bestiary and asked if he could have a copy of the book. It was only after seeing the hesitation on the man's face that Joe remembered how expensive paper was and, therefore, how expensive books were. He tried to back out of the deal, but the man had already handed him the book and wouldn't take no for an answer. It seemed that the bunny corn was even rarer and therefore more expensive than he had expected. Joe left the store without the bunny corn, much to his relief. He almost walked right into a person who was waiting at the door, but was luckily able to stop himself in time.
Excuse me, sorry about that.
Are you Joe of the Wanderers Guild?
Her voice was strong, but oddly stilted, like she had been rehearsing this phrase.
Yes? Joe was on the defensive now. She must have been following him.
She nodded and took a deep breath and said her next words in such a rush that Joe almost couldn't understand them.
I need a team in a guild and I suck at talking to people. Please let me be in yours.
Staring at the furiously blushing woman, Joe almost couldn't think of a response.
What's your class and what position do you want? We need a ranged person for sure and a rogue if possible.
He trailed off as her face got even redder.
I range! I can be range!
She slapped her hands on her face.
I suck so much! I'm so sorry. I'll just go.
Please wait. You came all this way. At least make your case!
Joe called as she started to run. She slowed, stopped, and then came back to him while staring at the ground. She mumbled a few things and nodded at him, clearly thinking he could hear what she had just said. Seeing his lack of comprehension, she tried again.
I'm Alexis. I use poison and crossbows.
Great. What's your class and level?
Joe patiently prodded. Even if she wasn't a good fit for the team, there wasn't exactly a long line of people looking to join him. A single willing spirit was worth a dozen forest helpers.
I'm level 10, and I'm an aromatic artificer.
Alexis spoke boldly, swallowing hard when she realized she had practically shouted at him.
I'm so sorry. I have so much trouble with my voice when I get nervous, and then it makes me worse, and I...
It's fine. It's all good.
Joe stopped her before she could self-destruct. An artificer. Do you make weapons or trinkets?
No. I make, weapon augments for ranged weapons. I can upgrade them, and well... Yes, I can make weapons. No one else can use the weapons without the requisite skill, though, or they, kinda die. It'll shatter in their hands and backlash on them.
Have you made your own weapons?
Joe was really having fun right now. He remembered when he had been considered an awkward introvert. He had increased his social ability by quite a bit, and now he was just called strange. When she nodded,
Joe looked at the clock and noticed that they only had a few hours of light left. Perfect. Can you meet me tomorrow morning at the East Gate? 9 in the morning game time? The other guys on the team will join us, and we can see if we work well together.
That's great, thanks, bye.
Alexis turned and scampered away. See you then? Joe called after her in confusion. What a strange day. He went to his room and worked on his puzzle cube for an hour, then worked to study, optimize, and memorize more information from his book on rituals. Deciding to go to bed early for once to appease his burning eyes and throbbing head, he returned to the nearby inn and went to sleep. Joe checked his notifications with a smile right before closing his eyes.
Characteristic point training completed. +1 to intelligence, wisdom, perception, and dexterity. These stats cannot be increased further by any means other than system rewards for 24 hours game time.
Chapter 10. Joe's eyes flew open, and he looked at the time in full panic mode. He had overslept. Gah! This is what he gets for going to bed at a normal, healthy time. His body takes advantage of his thoughtfulness. Joe looked out of his window and contemplated trying to find a way down. He was on the second floor of the building, so it wasn't a great option, but going downstairs and around the block just to get to this street again was going to cost him almost 10 minutes. Wait. Why not go out the window? He was only 10 feet off the ground, and he was a master jumper. If that failed too badly, well then, he was also a healer that could fix broken bones. Joe opened the window, stepped out on the ledge, and closed the window carefully. A well-aimed shadow spike hitting the metal clasp locked the window, and Joe prepared to jump down while considering a life of crime. Taking a deep breath and preparing for pain, Joe jumped. His body aligned itself without conscious assistance, and just before landing, he did a flip that ate up most of his momentum. He landed heavily, but only lost a single point of health due to true damage from impacting terrain.
That was awesome!
Joe whooped and laughed, then took a single step forward and collapsed. His stamina was entirely depleted, likely from the fancy acrobatics. Wait, definitely from the acrobatics.
Skill gained. Aerial Acrobatics, Novice 1. This is a sub-skill of jump and boosts the effectiveness of any mid-air movements. Masters of this skill have been known to remain in the air long enough to cross canyons, and sages are rumored to be able to walk on clouds. You, though, you can do a flip. Effect. Ease of movement while in the air increases by 2% until the end of the beginner ranks.
It took almost 10 seconds until Joe could stop wheezing and start walking. Still faster than leaving the front of the building. At least, that's what he kept telling himself. Joe hurried to the east gate, waving at the two groups of people that were standing a little bit away from each other.
Jackson, Bard, this is Alexis. She is going to be trying out for a position on our team as a ranged damage dealer.
Bard grunted, and Jackson nodded in her direction politely, if a bit thoughtlessly. It was obvious that they both had other things that they were thinking about. From the way Jackson's hands were moving, Joe could see that the monk wanted to get back to trying to adjust the world. Bard remained as inscrutable as ever. Just as the group started to depart, they were halted by a guild member running up to them with a letter.
"From Aten," the messenger told Joe breathlessly. "He said that we have a good location, but there is something strange going on, and we need a strange person to look into it. Then he said to just tell you to look into it and not tell you that he called you... strange."
The messenger coughed and looked away, obviously a bit embarrassed.
"Thanks." Joe opened the letter as the man wobbled off, muttering about his running skills stagnating.
The messenger did not get a tip. There was a pause as Joe read over the missive, but then he snorted and looked at the notification that appeared.
"Your guild leader has shared a secret quest with you. If you complete it, you will gain the rewards while the guild receives the renown. Accept? Yes? No?"
There was no other information about the quest besides the letter unfolding to show a crude map that he'd have to follow. Joe accepted the quest, and a proper notification appeared.
"Quest alert.
the secret of Sir Barrington. A town that fits the needs of your guild has been found, but the locals are somewhat hostile to outsiders. Their mayor, Sir Barrington, has refused to let the town fall back under the banner of Ardania. He says it is because they aren't needed and never have been, but something strange is going on. Note, this is a secret quest and has many possible routes to completion. Rewards will be given based on the information you find, as well as how you use it.
Looks like we have a new plan, everyone. I'm going on a quest, and I need my team with me, so I hope you all have free time, Joe told the others triumphantly, calming down a bit when he remembered that they were all in the trial phase. I do understand if you don't want to go, but it's for the guild, and if we complete it, let's just say you might be accepted by the others a little easier.
No one decided to stay behind, which suited Joe's purposes perfectly. It was hard to get to know someone with only a few short, action-packed hours. Now they would have an overnight expedition to really talk. An hour of walking through the forest later, no one had said anything beyond pointing out monsters followed by a short monologue about bone structure from Jackson. Joe was feeling a bit put out, but perhaps he hadn't thought about the ramifications of creating a party composed of introverts, experts, and expert introverts. He decided that as the team leader, it was up to him to get to know his minions. Teammates. Same difference.
So, Alexis, Joe started brightly, startling the others, and making them look for whatever was attacking them. Can you tell us a little bit about your class and abilities? What does an aromatic artificer do?
I use crossbows and bolts.
Alexis looked down at the ground.
The aromatic part of it is misleading. It's a specialization usually associated with people like candle makers, but with me, it's...
The others waited, some more patiently than others. Bard loudly voiced his thoughts, and a touch of mana colored his word.
Ach! Just go ahead and spit it out, lass. No one here's gonna bite your head off.
Contrary to Joe's expectations, Bard's kind words had the intended effect. Had he given her a buff? Alexis rubbed her neck and spoke a little more boldly.
Well, I specialized into this class because of the massive bonuses to area of effect that I get. Instead of vaporizing wax and allowing pretty smells to make their way to people's noses, my artificed weapons release a cloud of poison gas that rapidly expands and expends itself, exceptionally potent against tightly packed groups.
How do we avoid being caught in the poison?
Jackson voiced his first question of the day that did not relate to anatomy. Alexis blushed and hesitated a little.
You don't. I just need to make sure not to use these arrows when you are too close to the enemy. I'll soften them up at a distance and then switch to standard arrows.
How deadly is the poison? Joe interrupted thoughtfully. I have a spell that lets me heal poison over time, but it might be a somewhat underpowered ability if your abilities match your level.
The size of the arrow is the determining factor. It impacts how much poison I can put into it.
Alexis informed them, voice beginning to get soft again.
More poison means more spread, but poison can be time-consuming and difficult to make. This means that my smallest poison arrows have the most deadly and concentrated versions, but those also usually get injected. The most dangerous variant is a student-ranked poison, though my weakest is still beginner-ranked.
So what I really need to worry about clearing is beginner-ranked right now?
Joe thought over her words.
It'll take some practice, but I should be able to clear it out if we get hit by it. If not, I can heal you up and try again.
Yeah, thanks.
Alexis was getting close to hyperventilating, so Joe decided to move the conversation onward.
What did you all pick as your professions at level 5?
Joe looked around, mainly getting shrugs in answer. Joe glared at the group until they started to crack from the building pressure. Bard finally decided to bite the bullet and speak.
I took performer. Boosts my effect when I chant, speak, dance, or act.
Should be no surprise to anyone else, but I took chiropractor,
Jackson announced.
It helps me.
Jackson was driven to the ground as a black streak slammed into him from above.
There was a rumbling growl coming from what turned out to be a bear, and it was biting Jackson as hard as it could. As the others turned to fight it off, Alexis beat them to the punch by screaming and using an ability.
"Pinning shot!"
she yelped in an almost surprised tone, pulling at a strap on her shirt. An oversized crossbow, which looked more similar to a ballista than anything, unhooked from her back, flipped up, and snapped into place on her shoulder, instantly launching a bolt as long as her arm. The recoil of the bolt launching sent her staggering backward, but the bear had it far worse. The projectile caught the beast in the side and sent it flying into a tree trunk several feet from its starting location. The bolt dug into the wood, pinning the bear against the tree a few feet above the ground. A soft explosion followed, the arrow exhaling a puff of smoke that quickly spread away from the impact site. It dissipated after a single second, but unfortunately, the fallen Jackson was still caught within the area of effect. As soon as the smoke vanished, Joe was at Jackson's side with a healing spell to stabilize him. It was obvious to all that Jackson's health was falling rapidly, mainly from the potent poison he had just inhaled, but also from the sudden damage and perhaps a broken neck. Joe activated Cleanse and worked to combat the poison directly. His Cleanse skill was only ranked at Beginner Zero, but he had 10% bonus effectiveness against poison and toxins that were affecting a person, so he slowly started to win. Clearing out the poison took a long minute, but Joe was able to stave off the damage for long enough that the blood-curdling effect petered out. He was a little frustrated that he hadn't been able to clear it out directly, but Jackson had survived, and that was what really mattered here.
Skill increase. Cleanse. Beginner 1. Working to clear out a deadly poison is a great way to gain experience cleansing someone. Remember, poisoning your friends isn't a bad thing. If it is for experience.
Jackson weakly reached up and grabbed his own head. With a sickening twist and several popping sounds, his bones realigned. His voice rasped like a chain smoker.
Don't suppose you can heal these bones? I set them, so...
Bard gagged, and Alexis seemed to be in shock. Joe, though pale, nodded and cast mend on the monk. Soon he was back on his feet, doing disturbing stretches.
Range of motion has not suffered. Good. I am quite thirsty, though.
I have water. Joe paused as he remembered one of the most underused functions of his cleansing ability. Let me do this directly, if that's okay. Let your neck take a few minutes off. He channeled Cleanse into the monk, and soon Jackson was commenting on the well-hydrated buff. So much so that Joe soon fed water into himself and the other members of the party to ensure that they were all at peak performance.
That was the cub of the bear we had to fight yesterday, Jackson mentioned offhandedly. At least it had the same bone structure and markings. Perhaps that is a hidden function of fighting bears. If you kill the mother bear and they have a spawn out in the wild, it will hunt you down and attempt an assassination at an unknown time.
So you were saying that if we kill one, we're going to have to kill their whole family?
Alexis seemed aghast and was twisting a chunk of cloth between her fingers.
I'm not sure I like the combat mechanics in this game.
Was that your normal weapon?
Bard waved at the massive crossbow that was once again hidden on her back.
Huh? Bertha? No, that's my... I like to think of it as my ultimate ability.
Alexis seemed to be breathing easier around them. She showed two small crossbows that were in holsters like pistols and pulled them out.
These are my normal armaments, but when I'm startled or stressed, I tend to go overboard and throw everything I have at my target.
Overkill is the best kind of kill, Joe chuckled as they finally found something to chat about. For the next hour of their walk, they discussed their favorite ways to finish off an opponent. It was a good time. Chapter 11. Joe had never traveled in this direction before. At the very least, he had never gone this far to the east. They had swiftly passed through the plains surrounding the city of Ardania. After discussing the quest for a while, they lapsed back into silence. Finally, after a full day of walking, they broke through the dense forests where the majority of animal enemies lived. Now they were walking down a path through cultivated fields, approaching their destination after about 10 hours of constant movement. The journey should have been more difficult, but Joe had set his class to mage and therefore was able to devote plenty of mana to his tiny yet potent repertoire of offensive spells. "Have any of you been to another town outside of Ardania?" Joe nervously eyed yet another farmer who seemed inexplicably hostile to them as they walked by.
"This is my first time outside of this city,"
Alexis commented, quickly becoming uncomfortable as the others looked at her oddly.
"What?"
"How in the world are you, level 10?
Jackson voiced the question the others were thinking.
"I completed quests, obviously. Beyond that, I also gain a ton of experience from making weapons and get bonus contribution experience when people use the things that I've made to kill enemies. Sure, no one can use my special weapons, but I can make augments and poisons for anyone."
Alexis kept her eyes on the road as the others exchanged astonished glances.
"Fighting is inefficient for leveling. We've only made 136 experience this entire trip. That's less than a tenth of what I can make in a normal 8-hour workday."
From there, the conversation began drifting into irritation or awkward silences after a full day of discussing their differences, and they were all tired and in need of a nap.
"There's the town," Joe called with relief as the first two-story building they had seen since leaving the city came into view.
The group had passed a few small farmhouses, but Joe was getting concerned by the dwindling daylight. If they hadn't found a place to stay the night by the time full dark arrived, he would have had to make a ritual to ward off creatures while they slept. This was not the best option, because this far away from the starter area, there was a possibility that his ritual would actually draw in a creature at a level that they couldn't hope to combat. A few minutes of more energetic travel later, they passed through the gate of a wooden palisade that encircled the town. Far different from the people in the fields, here people seemed happy. They were smiling and going about their evening while chatting or calling out to each other. Their smiles and relaxed moods faltered as they saw the strangers that had entered their secluded part of the world. Hushed whispers and furtive glances came their way, and as Joe's party moved through the town, the village folk scattered and emptied the streets ahead of them.
"That's don't bode well for making friends in the area,"
Bard sub-vocalized, locking eyes with Joe and pointing at a fleeing group with his chin. Was this attitude why the guild wanted us to come here? Joe pondered aloud. He looked over his letter again and noticed that they only had 3 days before the entire guild showed up, so if they wanted the rewards, they were going to need to work fast. They did have the kingdom's blessing to bring outlying towns under their control, and using force was an option unless they had already submitted. Not a good option, but it was an option. "We have a very limited time frame to do this correctly. Let's get a couple of rooms and get an early start in the morning. I think we all need a break." They found an inn, which was a very nice way to say dive bar with rooms. The bartender was very reluctant to hand over keys to the room, but did so after they paid his exorbitant fee. When they actually got into the rooms, they turned right around and took a vote on if they would rather sleep outside. The beds had so many bugs in them that they were visibly moving. The only reason that they didn't leave and sleep in the open was the simple fact that they had needed to pay up front. At least the bartender repeating "no refunds" so many times made sense now. The vote was set aside when Bard pointed out that it was better to be somewhere that had at least a modicum of protection from the elements and marauding creatures. In an attempt not to be infested or contract whatever diseases were implanted in the bed, the group stepped out of the room and had Alexis fire an arrow into the mattress. A cloud of poison filled the entire space, lingering quite a bit longer than it would have done outside. Unsurprisingly, there was no window in the wall of the tiny room. That might have added some aspect of comfort. After the dangerous miasma dissipated, they stepped back into the room and looked things over. The bed was no longer moving, but Joe had no interest in laying in it and bringing back bedbug eggs in his robe when he left this place. Using a broom handle, they carefully flipped the bed up against the wall and cleared the floor, lying directly on the ground in the now open space. Between the poor comfort and the raucous bar scene, none of them slept soundly at all. Even still, morning came too soon.
Coffee?
Joe was staring at a new bartender, but when the man responded, Joe was simply dumbfounded.
No coffee in town.
The man shook his head in the negative.
Too expensive to import, and we can't grow it round here. I've got cornmeal or wheatmeal. Milk to drink. Meat is extra.
Joe's eyes had dark circles under them. He tried to process the words coming out of this man's mouth, but they simply didn't have any meaning to him.
Coffee?
Get out.
The team of adventurers walked out of the hovel they had called home for the night and began looking around for anything that may indicate a glaringly obvious method to complete their quest. Joe looked around at the few businesses in the area and grunted,
Granary, sawmill, carpenter, general goods, and a tailor with the smallest selection of clothes I've ever seen. There is a blacksmith that only makes crude household items and horseshoes. Why in the world was this town selected to be our guild's base?
Outside my pay grade.
Jackson took a deep breath.
Smells nice, though. Better than the city by far. Should we go find this Barrington fellow?
There were only a few non-residential buildings in the entire town, so it wasn't overly difficult to find the city hall. In fact, it turned out to be the smallest building within the town's borders.
This is a nice change,
Alexis stated as they walked into the building.
Government not using tax money to make itself look fancy? Most unrealistic thing about this entire game, and I've seen a man shatter a rock by staring at it.
Their Spartan surroundings allowed them to see the man that must have been the mayor. Sir Barrington was sitting at a desk talking to two others who were writing out his decrees. He looked up at them as they entered the building, huffing in annoyance at their interruption. Joe looked over the extraordinarily hairy man, a bit confused. His instincts were screaming something at him, and he could feel his skill, hidden sense, going wild. No wonder the person who had scouted this town had said that something strange was going on. This place was sure to be the epicenter of oddity.
Good morning, Sir Barrington, I presume?
Joe's words were seemingly ignored, so he decided to get to the point.
I am here as a representative of my guild. Within 3 days, the majority of my guild will be joining us in the area. We have been charged by the kingdom to bring this area back under the banner of Ardania, and I would love for us to begin our relationship on a positive note. Is there anything that we can do for the town that would allow us? The mayor stood, and at full height, he was an unbelievable 8 feet tall.
His eyes narrowed, and he glared at Joe before speaking with a booming voice. It seemed he had a cold, though, because a few of his words seemed a bit twisted.
You walk in here and tell me you want us to be friends at the same time that you are saying that your guild is coming to take over no matter what we do? To me it seems that you should be treated as invaders coming to destroy our way of life, our baritage!
Joe had expected this reaction, to a degree. We are not coming here to take over, nor do we want to destroy your heritage. We are coming to join the town, offer protection against monsters, and grow our communal strength. There will be no coups, no overthrowing of the local government.
So what do you call coming and changing things without permission?
Thick and hairy hands pawed at the air in agitation.
I'm not going to give you permission to do a dang thing. No land, no sale of goods, no, forgive me. That isn't fair. I don't want to be overbearing to this degree. Tell you what, man cub. I'm elected. I'll make this simple for you. If you go and get permission from every building owner in the town to come and live here, you can join us with a high reputation. Otherwise, you're gonna be seen as invading outsiders, and we'll do everything we can to make your life difficult here.
Why can't we just buy some land and use it for our own purposes? Joe challenged in reply. You can keep your government and pipe dreams of not being a part of the kingdom.
All the land round here belongs to the town. No one needs to own anything more than their house or shop. No outside trade means no need to hoard goods in hope of selling them. We all participate in feeding and clothing our people. You want a drink? You contribute more to the town in the form of grain and we make alcohol. Need clothes? Bring them the equal value in food or other goods. We don't want you here. You'll destroy our economy just by existing.
What economy? Joe is beginning to get upset. This entire town is falling apart. Every building I've seen is built by stacking logs. Every winter you must freeze, and I already know for a fact what summer feels like. You are all surviving, sure, but none of you are succeeding. Everything that I've seen, from the houses to the clothes on your people's backs, is one bad winter away from being completely erased from the world. Just like your citizens. We can change that. We can bring trade, skilled workers, and specialized tools.
A deep rumble filled the room, but the mayor stopped the roar that was building in his chest. He took a deep breath and glared at Joe.
Tradition, boy. We haven't had to change our ways in over 100 years when the kingdom pulled its forces and left us to fend for ourselves. They abandoned us. They basically fed us to the wolves, and we were forced to grin and bear it. Think on that for a bit as you look down your nose and change our lives to better fit your comfort level.
Joe didn't know how to respond to that, and even though he was fuming, he recognized that the man had made a good point. He shook his head violently. No. They might be content, but they were simply existing. None of them knew better, so they didn't know what they were missing. Knowing the mayor wouldn't want to continue their conversation, Joe simply motioned to his team and left. There was a quest notification waiting for him as he walked outside. Quest updated. The Secret of Sir Barrington. The mayor of the town has issued a challenge to you to get permission from every person in town who owns a building. As this is a secret quest, there is only one possible way of completing this quest. Reward for completing the quest using this method. Ability to join the town with a high starting reputation. Failure. A massive loss of reputation with the town's residents if your guild relocates here. Joe discussed this method with the other members of his party, and they all agreed that it had a very low chance of success. For now, though, this was the only clue they had been given. They decided that they would go door to door, and if worst comes to worst, they would likely still gain a plethora of small quests. Perhaps they would be able to find some other information that would open a new door for them. They were right, and also very wrong. The party went to the first shop in town, the blacksmith. After discussing amongst themselves, they decided to have Bard do the talking. He had a high skill level in speech, as well as a high charisma from his class. Entering the shop, they were given a searching, suspicious once-over from the proprietor. Bard cleared his throat and began to speak.
"Good morning to ya! We're coming here to try and get on your good side. How you feel about slapping on a smile and telling the mayor that you think we'd be a good addition to this here town?"
Staring at the scald, sweating from the heat of the forge, the blacksmith tried to parse his words.
"You need me to give you a pass to join our town? A whole mess of people that'll come here and bring fancy new smithing techniques and run me out of business? You want me to lose my job with a smile on my face?
I mean, I think we'd be happy to help you out if you needed something done,"
Bard stated lamely. A smile curled the lips of the blacksmith.
"Now we can talk. In fact, I do have something you could do for me that would make my estimation of you increase heavily. My family used to run a mine in the area, but it was overrun by wolfmen a while back. They eventually abandoned it, but now all sorts of critters call it home. You clear out,
every monster in there for me, and not only will I give you a glowing recommendation, I'll give y'all a discount on ores and a few hundred gold.
Quest alert. Foreboding Ferrum. To get into the blacksmith's good graces, he has asked you to clear his family's iron mines. His words don't match the glint in his eyes, and it is likely that you are being sent to your death. Why are you waiting? Accept already. Reward. Reputation and a discount on ores. 300 gold. Failure cannot progress in this branch of the quest, the secret of Sir Barrington. Accept? Yes. No. The party looked at each other uneasily. Joe decided to take the initiative with his favorite phrase. We'll do it.
Excellent!
The blacksmith's lips curled upward in pure satisfaction.
You have a map? Let me mark the location of the mine for you.
Chapter 12. They were walking away from the sounds of metal being pounded flat when Jackson suddenly contorted his face into a strange expression.
Did anyone else think that was a bit strange?
The fact that you are calling something else strange simply proves that it was creepy beyond words,
Alexis stated flatly, her irritation overriding her typical shyness. Jackson smiled at her with an overjoyed look replacing his previous one.
Thank you for having such faith in my judgment. It means so much.
He actually seemed to wipe away a tear.
Jackson, Joe put his face in his hands, just... All right. We are low on time, so we should go to the mine right away. First, we need to find a place to set our bind point so that we don't get tossed all the way back to Ardania if we die somehow.
I saw a small temple back a ways,
Bard supplied casually. He thought a moment longer.
Less than that. Smaller? Mayhap a shrine?
A shrine? Joe grinned at the idea blooming in his mind. Can you find the way back?
Easy.
Bard led them through town and out the gate. They walked for a few minutes, to the point that they were sure Bard had no idea where he was going. Just before Joe decided to say something, Bard pointed at an overgrown and rotten shack that stood about 10 feet off the road. Joe walked over excitedly, and sure enough, there was a small effigy contained in the room. He walked closer, and it started to hum with a weak power. Would you like to make a donation of mana, stamina, or coin to the final shrine of the Spriggan, minor deity of nature and fertility? Yes. No. There was an odd feeling of hopefulness attached to the words, and Joe nearly felt bad about selecting no. He stepped closer to the shrine, and a different kind of glow washed over him. Another message appeared, this one tinged with panic. The shrine of the Spriggan is devoted to this forest and is a lesser nature deity. Your status as a champion has been recognized. If you move any closer to the shrine... You moved closer. Stop. A call for protection has been issued to the beasts in the area. Leave now, and you will not be hunted. Please go away. Joe stepped forward and touched the effigy, even though he felt bad for doing so. You have found an unguarded shrine. As you are not currently under attack, you have the option to rededicate this shrine to your deity. Would you like to do so now? Yes? No? Joe selected yes, and the image of a woman formed from a tree warped. Soon, the stone drooped and collapsed into a mud puddle. From the puddle rose a book, the decay and moss that had covered the previous effigy nowhere to be seen. Joe felt a pull on his mana, and a full half of it was drained from his pool of power. The mana he lost washed outward, reinforcing and repairing the small shack that had been built around the shrine. The shape of the small building began to change. The triangular roof turned into a stone book placed upside down, and the walls became books placed open and upright. It was a beautiful building, eye-catching and somehow subtle at the same time. Soon it looked like a proper rest stop or a comfortable place you could come and study on a lazy evening. You have converted the final shrine of a deity. Unless one of their champions can muster the power to undo your conversion, any blessings this deity has given out will be removed, and any abilities bestowed will be turned into skills. Any progress gained by their worshippers will be retained, but all extra effect from the divine will be lost. You have earned a reward from the continuous quest, Reclamation of the Lost. After making a new shrine for Tatum, you have been blessed. You have gained +1 perception, +1 free skill point. You have gained the buff Pierce the Veil for 36 hours. Pierce the Veil. Illusions and mind-altering effects are 50% less effective. Likelihood of finding rare items is increased by 5%. Time remaining until buff ends, 35 hours, 59 minutes.
What did you just do to this place?
Alexis gaped at the changed building, running her hands over the smooth marble the walls appeared to be made of.
I polished it up?
Joe offered with a too innocent smile. He tuned out other distractions and tried to follow his hidden sense. After a few minutes of crawling around on the dirt floor, he brushed aside a clump of dirt and found a small symbol. Pouring mana into it, he gained the option to add this shrine as a fast travel node.
Yes, yes, and yes!
He hid the symbol by replacing a bit of dirt and watched as a bright white circle appeared around the shrine. No one else reacted, which made him nod in satisfaction. Exactly the same as last time, the circle was only visible to people that had access to it. Joe smiled as he looked around. Now this shrine would act as a fast travel destination.
Looks like we can set this as our bind point. Just walk up to the shrine, and you should get the option.
He bound himself here, and the others followed suit. After making sure they were all prepared, the group started walking, following their map to where the entrance of the mine should be. Sound from the forest started to wane as they approached their destination. There were fewer birds chirping, fewer animals rustling in the underbrush, and even the vegetation in the area seemed lackluster. Joe noticed that there was a strange fungus growing on some of the trees, and some of the smaller plants were visibly wilting. Was all of this an effect of whatever was in the mine? They drew closer to their destination and found an overgrown trail that had likely been the main road to the mines in the past. The area around the mine entrance was filled with young growth, mostly long grass and ferns with a few saplings mixed in. This area must have been clear-cut to allow better access, but over time, nature had begun creeping back in.
I think that's the entrance.
Alexis pointed at a hole in the world. It was a logical conclusion. The trail went straight to the hole, and this was where they had been directed. The mine didn't look like much, but Joe supposed not everything had a grand entryway. In fact, seeing the state of the town, Joe would have been far more nervous if there was a grand doorway awaiting them. They trudged over to the mine, nervous energy filling them as they waited for whatever trap this was to be sprung. Nothing jumped out at them, and none of them fell over from unseen attacks. They walked into the mine, finding that after the entryway, it widened enough for two of them to walk side by side. Joe inspected the others for signs of claustrophobia, but only saw typical wariness. Even if they would be freaked out in real life, there was something about knowing that you would be revived if something went wrong that was... freeing? That didn't quite cover it. Was there a word that meant the ability to be totally reckless?
Wait one moment.
Bard coughed into his fist to clear his throat and started chanting lightly.
Bones of iron and skin of stone, like calls to like. Now leave us alone.
For a single moment, Joe felt like the earth was pressing down on him. He felt like he would be smashed into the rock around him, swallowed deep into the mantle. Then it all fell away. Taking in a shuddering breath, he locked eyes with Bard.
What in the world did you just do?
Bard shrugged and gestured at Joe.
All of you now have protection from Earth. Half damage from any earth-based sources. Did you think I was only some fancy axe man? I'm a scald, blast it.
Bones of steel, you say?
Jackson looked at his fingers, trying to determine if the buff would have any impact on his abilities.
It's a metaphor, and I clearly said bones of iron.
Bard slapped wiggling fingers away as Jackson reached for him.
Get off!
Really good idea. Thanks, Bard.
Alexis muttered quietly. Joe smirked a bit. It seemed their most introverted member had taken a shine to their performer. They walked deeper into the mine, but while Joe continued walking boldly, the others were faltering. Joe looked at them quizzically, but they didn't return the look or explain their actions. When Alexis spoke up, he found his answer.
Did anyone bring a torch by chance?
Right. Joe had dark vision. He waited for the others to answer, but no one spoke up.
No one has a torch? We came to a mine, people.
You are the party leader, are you not?
Jackson smugly stated into the darkness.
Planning falls on you.
I can see in the dark.
Joe was getting frustrated. His team only seemed to focus in on their areas of interest. Wait. There was something there. An idea.
Hey, Alexis?
Yes?
Alexis could hear the dark satisfaction in Joe's voice. It added a creepy undertone to his words.
Why should we all slink into the darkness and fight unknown amounts of creatures? What would you need in order to fill this place with poison?
Joe's enthusiasm faded a bit as she shook her head.
Taking out the entire mine? I'd need a barrel the size of a man, 200 sets of my needed herbs, some way to stop the finished product from dispersing, a delivery system, and also a stopper or seal to stop fresh air from getting down here.
Alexis was listing things out on her fingers, checking some unknown list in her head. Apparently, this was something she thought about fairly often. Jackson spoke next.
Couldn't we build an extra smoky fire in the entryway and poison the place that way?
Alexis seemed to be in her element.
No, that's a simplistic myth. If this was a single-room cave, that might work. A mine tends to have air shafts drilled throughout, not to mention that smoke moves up, not down. If you can find a way to block the entrance, keep air going to the fire, and blow the smoke down the tunnel without adding fresh oxygen, then that would work.
So what you're saying is that we are going in and we should not keep blabbing and telling to beasties that we're coming?
Bard shook his head and lifted up a thick bundle of sticks.
I stepped outside, collected these, and came back into time it took you to fight it out. Did you even notice I was gone?
I didn't, I promise, Jackson told him excitedly. Did you get a sneaking skill?
What? No, I just...
Bard rolled his eyes at Jackson's misplaced enthusiasm.
Thanks, Bard. That was really thoughtful of you.
Alexis's eyes seemed to glow as she took a stick and coated it in something. The next instant, flames began crackling across the wood, and light filled the tunnel for a few feet in each direction.
Let's find out what's waiting for us down here.
Chapter 13. Bees. That's what was waiting for them. Well, bee was a very polite and gentle representation. Whatever these things were actually named, they were the approximate size of large hornets, but their stinger was attached via a tail like a scorpion. As the humans came to find out, each of the insects only had a single point of health, but there were thousands of them. Not only were they furious at the intruders, but their stingers were full of a potentially deadly poison. As it currently stood, the only reason Joe was still alive was that his mage armor was perfect for repelling these bugs. Their main damage capabilities were derived from the toxin they were filled with, so even when he was swarmed by the insects, his shielding only dropped by a single point per second. He had his hands full keeping the others alive, though.
Oh, you blasted bugs!
Bard was swiping at the bees furiously, his axes turned sideways so he could use them like giant fly swatters. Each swing killed dozens of the aerial assailants, but there were thousands willing to take their place. Damage was building as the poison stacked, and Joe was hard-pressed to cleanse his team fast enough to keep them alive between healing spells.
"Just keep me going, please!"
Alexis called as she furiously concocted a compound in a mortar and pestle. Her health was draining slower than the others, though she had far less health overall. Joe chalked it up to a hefty poison resistance. There was no other explanation that he could think of. Jackson was having the most violent reaction, though.
"I hate bugs!"
he screamed into the air, swatting everything that came near him. Although his palms were coated in ichor and bits of chitin, he showed no signs of slowing down his attacks.
"Are you allergic in real life?" Joe gasped the words out between spell casts.
"Exoskeletons! Exoskeletons, Joe! Do you know what that means?"
Jackson screeched, sparing Joe a dark look.
"No bones! They are useless creatures!"
Joe was so shocked by the actual rage in Jackson's voice that he almost miscast his next healing spell.
"You have a serious fixation on..."
"Eureka!"
Alexis called while pouring water into the compound. She mixed it once and touched the torch to it. There was a flash of flame, and then a dense smoke began billowing out of the stone bowl. Any bugs caught in the smoke dropped to the ground without a twitch. Smoke filled the entire room, and Joe was soon able to clear the poison from the others' systems. A few more healing spells cleared the puncture wounds from their bodies, and Joe finally looked up at Alexis with a bit of hero worship.
"Thanks for that, Alexis. This whole thing could have gone really bad. Without you, we might have needed to retreat. What are you..."
Joe's voice trailed off as he watched Alexis crawling around the room, sweeping the fallen bugs into a bag.
"It's a stackable poison, Joe,"
Alexis chuckled under her breath as she collected the bugs.
"What do you think I'm doing? Heck, the only reason it took so long to make that bug killer was that I had to make sure that even a concentrated dose wouldn't degrade their poison."
"You did research and made a bug-killing concoction while being literally stung to death?"
Joe had to hand it to her. That was some serious dedication to her craft, even if it had kind of been a horrible experience for the other members of the group.
"Obviously not."
She rolled her eyes, seemingly forgetting that he could see in the dark.
"I didn't die. Hard to be stung to death if I survive it."
"Why is everyone around me always so literal?" Joe sat down and cupped his chin in his hands, knowing they would be in this room for at least another few minutes as people recovered their mental energy and Alexis collected her samples.
"Being very careful and specific with your words is an important lesson that everyone should learn. If people didn't run their mouths and instead said exactly what they meant, there would be much less confusion in the world,"
Alexis stated as she worked. Bard and Jackson nodded along sagely, while Joe took a moment to think on what she was saying.
"Misunderstandings and miscommunication are the largest contributors to anger and fear. I work with poison, and being very specific saves me from respawn at least 3 times a week.
"You make a good point," Joe admitted slowly, thinking about rituals and the detailed requirements they insisted upon. If he applied the same care with his words and actions as he did with his diagrams, he might do better in life. Perhaps he would make fewer enemies.
"What do you all think we will see further in the mine? More of these scorbies?"
Jackson wondered aloud, scratching at a dead bug in his hands.
"Scorbies? Scorpion bees?" Joe laughed at the term. "I love it! Is that their actual name?"
"No idea."
Jackson was now squishing the insect in his hands, trying to find some way to do tests on them. He seemed to grow disgusted and crushed the carapace without another thought.
"I don't have a high enough perception to glean information about them, and I don't have a scan or identify skill yet. So yes, scorbies."
Jackson went silent for a moment.
"Huh. I just got a notification and a title. The title is... Entomologist? No, I hate bugs. This is... Oh, wait, I get bonus damage against bugs now. This works nicely for me. Thank you, system."
"What was the notification?"
Bard verbally prodded the distracted monk.
Yes. Jackson pulled up his game log. All it says is, I like your name better. This race has been renamed. Have a title and some experience.
That's awesome for you.
Alexis stood and brushed herself off.
Everyone ready to go?
Sure am, Joe responded to her. But yeah, Jackson, back to the question. If there aren't more Scorbies, I'm betting that the only other things in here would be creatures that are either immune to their poison or have such high defense that the Scorbies can't damage them.
What exciting options,
Bard deadpanned as he picked at his ears. Joe looked at the quest information. Oh, look at that! There's a progress bar on this quest now. We have apparently cleared 98% of the creatures out of the mines.
Is that a percentage of total numbers? Because there were literally thousands of the Scorbies. Or is that a way to look at it in terms of power? What if we called all the Scorbies we defeated a single monster? Is this based on challenge rating?
Jackson seemed to be on a roll, trying out new options in an attempt to gain more titles and experience. Joe tried to do so, but only received a notification in response.
Unable to modify progress bars. Learn one of the following skills in order to make status changes. Probability, monster migration habits, or beast ecology.
It seems that we will not be figuring out what the system uses for progress here. Joe relayed the information he had learned, and the group had no choice but to shrug and decide that they would simply need to explore. They moved into the next tunnel, moving as quickly as possible while attempting to remain fairly quiet. This was not a natural cave system, and without powerful geomancers or mining equipment from the real world, well, hand tools can't exactly create massive labyrinths. Plus, this was a small-town mine. If Joe's estimation was correct, they could explore the entire mine in an hour at a normal walking pace if they weren't sneaking around at a quarter speed. They had just begun relaxing and loosening up when a cracking, grinding vibration began to rumble through the tunnel. Exchanging a glance, they crept forward and snuck a peek around the corner. All of them had a long look at what awaited them, backed away, and then retreated all the way back to where they had killed the Scorbies. All was silent for a moment, but eventually, Jackson spoke up.
Well, I'd like to give it a shot.
You want to try and kill that?
Alexis squeaked in horror.
Wasn't that a golem?
I think it was a rock monster, Bard muttered to the group. Had a flash of insight. Pretty sure it was Skaldic knowledge firing off.
So what are you getting at?
Jackson tapped his chin in thought.
There is flesh and bone under that exterior. It isn't an exoskeleton.
Yup.
Bard nodded at him, and Jackson's face brightened.
Has real high defense, but that thing isn't a beastie we're fighting. That's its armor.
A flash of inspiration shone from Joe's eyes. Armor? I have an acid spell that deals triple damage to equipment. If I get enough time to melt the armor, do you think we can take it down? There was another moment of silent contemplation, but then Alexis shrugged and nodded.
I'm willing to give it a try. If things go bad, at least we changed our resurrection point.
Each of the others agreed, though Jackson made a stipulation that he would get the body for a few hours afterward for studying and testing. He apparently wanted to map out its skeletal system and find the best way to take it down in the future. Deciding upon a plan of attack, they shuffled back to the room the rock monster was inhabiting. Bracing themselves to run away if it were needed, the others watched as Joe slowly moved his hands in the patterns needed to dual-cast weak acid spray. Joe took a deep breath and pushed, channeling the spell. A cloud of acid enveloped the monster, but it didn't seem to notice the moisture. The creature heedlessly chewed on a stone while Joe continued bathing it in acid. After 4 seconds, if the carapace of the creature was considered equipment, the beast should have taken about 707 damage. Checking his mana, Joe was surprised to see that he was still over 3/4 full. The forethought of setting his class to mage when he left Ardania was paying dividends. After 6 seconds of being bathed in acid, the monster suddenly released a bellow of rage and surprise. It bucked in place, thrashing like a branded steer.
Its movements dislodged large portions of the armor its upper body was encased in, and it began taking actual damage from the acid rain down upon it. The monster turned in place and stood, looking for whatever it was that was causing it to feel pain for the first time in its life. Locking eyes on Joe, the rock monster charged at the ritualist. Having found a target, the cries of pain vanished. Instead,